Welcome to Hollywood. Everybody comes to Hollywood, got a dream. What's your dream?
When I was a little girl, I would pretend I was a princess trapped in the tower, and then this knight on a white horse would come charging up and rescue me.
Could you tell me how to get to Beverly Hills?
Sure. For $5.
You can't charge me for directions.
I can do anything I want to, baby. I ain't lost.
All right, okay. You have change for 20?
For 20, I'll show you personally. Wow.
Impressed?
You kidding me? I come here all the time. Well, color me happy. There's a sofa in here for two.
Close your mouth, dear.
Who is this girl here? Does she work?
She's in sales.
Touchstone Pictures presents the story of a date.
This isn't a date, it's business.
That led to a deal.
I have a business proposition for you. I'm going to be in town until Sunday. I'd like you to spend the week with me.
That's becoming a dream come true.
Time to shop. Get rid of your gum.
All right.
I don't believe you did that. You're going to be spending an obscene amount of money in here. So we're going to need a lot more help sucking up to us because that's what we really like. Oh. You understand me?
Sir, if I may say so, you're in the right store and the right city, for that matter.
They're two people who have no business being together.
Everybody is trying to land him.
Well, I'm not trying to land him. I'm just using him for sex.
Just doing a little business.
The company I'm buying this week, I'm getting for the bargain price of about $1
billion. $1 billion? Your folks must be really proud, huh?
Everything was going their way.
Well done!
Well done!
Walk, walk, walk!
Until...
I don't want you to go.
You hurt me.
Yes.
Don't do it again.
Something unexpected happened.
What the hell is wrong with you this week?
You fell in love with him? Did I not teach you anything? Look, I'm not stupid, okay? I'm not in love with him.
I can find you an apartment and get you a car.
I want more. I want the fairy tale.
I think you are a very special woman.
Touchstone Pictures presents Richard Gere.
So what happened after? He climbed up the tower and rescued her.
Julia Roberts.
She rescues him right back.
Pretty Woman.
Maybe you guys could, like, get a house together. Buy some diamonds. Oh!
Welcome, everyone, to Excess Week on Be Kind Rewind. This is your Disney Plus movie podcast. I, of course, am Dan Teets, and joining me for the first time in a very, very, very long time...
Hello.
My beautiful wife, Grayson.
Hi.
And we are here to officially open the 90s.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And in case you didn't look at the title, we are talking about probably one of the most controversial movies on television, as I'm getting a perplexed face
is
from
it
her.
One of the most controversial movies?
Well, let's let them know what movie it is. We are talking about the Julia Louis Dreyfus.
Definitely not Julia Louis Dreyfus.
Julia Roberts. Richard Gere movie.
Pretty Woman.
Oh, we got Roy Orbison. This is going to be a musical episode. Okay, I'm liking it already. This movie was actually released March the 23rd, 1990.
My birthday.
Congratulations, happy birthday. All the more reason to have you on here, this one. It did $463.4 million in box office revenue, which equates to $1.107 billion in today's money.
Mm.
So this is, I think...
That's a lot of De Niro.
Robert De Niro might have made that. This movie, I think, is our fourth movie that actually made $1 billion in today's money.
Mm.
And we aren't even getting into Avatar territory, which I don't even want to think about that because I don't want to do that one. But, Grayson said that she could probably quote this movie verbatim.
And did I disappoint?
No, you did not. And we watched it over the span of two nights because parenting is hard.
And I get really sleepy watching movies the older I get.
So, I'm going to ask you, the question that I always ask.
Okay.
How old were you when you first saw this movie?
Let's see. If it came out in 90, I was 9 or 10 probably when I saw it. I was probably like 11 or 12.
Okay. I don't think I watched this until I was in college, so we're talking 94, 95, and it would have been on a VHS. Probably rented from Blockbuster, or it might have been.
Yeah, same. Probably saw it the same year you did.
Or it might have been a pirated copy.
I'm pretty sure I saw it on good old VHS as well. When we used to go visit my dad, he would always let us go rent. Me and my friends, we'd always go rent a whole bunch of movies we weren't supposed to watch. At that age, and I think we watched it in the bonus room of my dad's house when I was probably 12, 11 or 12. Maybe 13, but no older than 13.
So
too young, probably. I'll say that.
Okay. So you were 12 or 13,
uh-huh.
And so we're talking probably both of us watched it about the same.
Probably like 92 to 94-ish,
yeah.
Sometime in there. Mm-hmm.
So the reason why I said this is one of the most controversial movies is the fact that
she's a hooker. Spoiler alert. Is that not okay? I'm getting a look.
Well,
I'm getting a look.
It's a little racy for a rated G mostly film. So trigger warning, if you are not a person, or if you are a person of delicate morals, and somehow you listen to us for 8 minutes and 6 seconds and you said, I may listen to this, you might want to skip this episode.
No way, Jose. Hang in there. That's just silly talk. So it's not an in-your-face, it's a hooker and pimp and all that. That's just the undertone of this.
No, because she actually...
That's not the plot.
Because she did not have a pimp.
True that. Because if I'm not mistaken, because like I said, I can verbatim it. I say who, I say when, I say how much.
Lord. All right. Well, we're kind of take two, click. We are getting ahead of ourselves. Let me go ahead and put the plot, which comes to us care of Wikipedia. It goes a little something like this. Edward Lewis, a powerful corporate raider from New York City, acquires and dismantles struggling companies, selling their assets for profit. He invites his girlfriend, Jessica, to join him on a business trip, but she grows weary of being at his constant beck and call, remember those words, and decides to end their relationship. One night, while leaving a business party in the Hollywood Hills, Edward takes his lawyer Phillips' Lotus Esprit sports car and unintentionally finds himself in the city's red light district on Hollywood Boulevard. It was there that he meets Vivian Ward, a prostitute. Lost and struggling to operate the manual transmission car, Edward pays Vivian to show him the way to the Regent Beverly Wilshire Boulevard
Hotel.
Oh, she
showed him the way, all right.
Impulsively, Edward hires Vivian for the night and, despite initial awkwardness, finds her charming and ultimately has sex with her. The following day, Edward asks Vivian to accompany him during a week-long series of business events that he must attempt while attempting to acquire Jim Morris's shipbuilding company. After some negotiation, Edward offers Vivian $3,000, which she excitedly accepts. He gives her money to buy appropriate clothes. However, when she tries to shop on Rodeo Drive, she is turned away by snobbish and rude saleswomen. She turns to Barney, the hotel's manager, for assistance. He teaches her proper etiquette and helps her purchase a cocktail dress for an important business dinner that evening. With the help of Bridget, an upscale store sales lady who is very kind to Vivian. Afterwards, and running late, Edward is astounded by Vivian's new look. During the dinner, Edward introduces Vivian to Morris and his grandson, David. The latter is being groomed to take over the company after his grandfather dies. The business meeting does not go well, and the Morrises are unimpressed by Edward's offer to purchase and break up their company. Edward takes notice of Vivian's transformation and becomes more open with her. He reveals details about his personal and business life, including his estranged relationship with his late father, Carter, at the time of his death. When Philip suspects that Vivian is a corporate spy after seeing her talk to David at a polo game, Edward reveals the true nature of their relationship. However, Philip later crudely propositions Vivian to buy her services after Edward is finished with her. She feels hurt and angry that Edward exposed her in that way. He apologized, admitted that he was jealous of Vivian talking to David, and acknowledging that her straightforward personality is having a positive effect on him. He takes Vivian by private jet to see La Traviata at the San Francisco Opera, a story about a prostitute who falls in love with a wealthy man. Sound familiar? The story moves her, and she breaks her no-kissing rule before having sex with him. After believing Edward has fallen asleep, Vivian confesses her love for him. As Edward's return to New York draws near, he offers to help Vivian get off the streets by suggesting that he put her up in a nice condo and provide her with an allowance. He promises to visit her regularly. However, she is offended by the offer, feeling that he is now treating her like a prostitute. She tells her childhood fantasy of being rescued from her abusive home by a knight on a white steed. Edward meets with Morse, but having been changed by his experience with Vivian, chooses to work with him to save his company instead of dismantling it. Meanwhile, as Philip is furious that Edward's new direction has cost him a fortune, he goes to the hotel to confront him. However, he only blames Vivian, and blaming her for Edward's changing character and angry at his business decision, he tries to rape her. Edward arrives, punches him, and fires him for his behavior. After completing his business in L.A., Edward asks Vivian to stay with him for one more night. However, he makes it clear that she should only do so if she wants to, not because he is paying her. Vivian gently refuses and leaves. The rejection prompts Edward to reevaluate his life, and while being driven to the airport, asks the chauffeur to detour to Vivian's apartment building. He climbs out of the white limousine's sunroof and ascends the fire escape to rescue Vivian, just like the knight in her childhood fantasy. He asks her what happens in her fantasy after the knight saved her, to which she responds, she saves him right back. The end.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, that's got a lot of holes in it, but yeah, that's a quick synopsis.
Yeah, it's pretty quick, pretty dirty, pretty in your face. So, Let's just talk about Vivian.
Mm-hmm.
Julia, I want to keep calling her Julia Louis-Dreyfus for some reason tonight. I think she is from Smyrna, right?
Julia Roberts is originally from Smyrna, Georgia,
okay.
Yes. In the movie, she quotes that she's from Millersville, Georgia.
Which is about hour, if that?
No, like probably 30 minutes
okay.
or so.
So the fact that she actually recognizes little podunk town called Milledgeville, which, for those of you who are not familiar with Georgia's history, used to be the capital of Georgia at one point in time.
True. Mm-hmm.
Now it just
it
has...
It is the exact center of the state.
Oh, okay. Well, I did not know that. So there's your geography and history lesson for the day.
For Georgia history, in case you were wanting to know.
So, she says that she got into this life because
she followed one mistake after another. Remember, there's one scene where they're in the bed together and they're talking. This is later in the week, and they're talking more vulnerably to each other and everything, and more open. And she talks about how one of the lines she says is, "It's easier to believe the bad stuff than the good stuff." More or less, it's paraphrasing, of course, but. And he tells her how wonderful she is, and she says it's just easier to believe the bad stuff. And that's how she kind of got into that life, because she had followed a bad decision, a bad boy, to California. And there she was, somehow, you know, ended up in that lifestyle.
And so she has this good friend named Kit DeLuca.
Kit.
Which I love her. Even though she is as trashy as she comes. And one of the comments that she made when she was standing there waiting on Vivian to go get, or to bring her money, to an old couple was 50 and 75.
And the wife can watch. No, 50, just, no, she says 50 grants and for 75 the wife can watch or something like that.
So she is she is the epitome of what a lady of the night is.
Well, and she's funny, and she has a backstory, too, that doesn't get really get into, but you kind of sense that she kind of has possibly a similar backstory to Vivian. But she's much more wild, and Vivian's much more put together. Like, even when they're literally on the street, like, Vivian's just very together, and even her speech and her thought processes, and the other one's like, We could make more money if we just had a pimp, you know. Like, she's always just wanting to kind of take kind of an easy route out.
Yeah.
And Vivian says, no. We say who, we say when, we say how much.
And we actually, we get introduced to Kit because Vivian hears her landlord saying, well, if you don't pay your rent, we're going to kick somebody else out on the street. And so she goes and looks in their toilet safe, which I love. It's a little green box, and I think it had $1 or $2 in there.
Oh, yeah, a couple bucks, yeah.
Not enough to obviously pay the rent.
So of course, she's furious and goes and finds Kit, and Kit had squandered the money on booze and drugs and partying.
Yeah, because she was hosting a party, and you can't let people down when you're hosting a party.
Yeah, no, he's definitely frowned upon.
Yeah. And so, they're like, all right, well, we got to go make money. And they're working Hollywood Boulevard because they say, well, we work from, I don't remember what
floor. From Esther this. Williams is where you belong, is what she says to the other girl that's on their corner, trying to work their corner.
Yeah, and they're out there on the Boulevard of Star Boulevard, whatever you want to call it. My word's not good tonight. And here comes Edward pulling up in a car that he had no business driving, even though it does handle on rails, which is another great line. And
this is kind of where it gets, I mean, this is the very beginning of the movie, but this is where it gets, where like the fork in the road, where it could have, without this decision, the movie wouldn't have happened, whatever, the story would have happened, because Kit actually gives him, quote unquote, to her because she's had a bad night because of the money and she's all stressed out and all. And she tells her, she's like, you look hot tonight, you go get him. That's a classy car, blah, 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 blah.
And so they get in, or she gets in the car and tells him that she'll take him to the hotel.
Wilshire Beverly.
For $20.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, she said, she started off at $5. And then he starts hemming and hawing, and she's like, no, now it's 10. And he's like, well, all I got is a 20. Can you make change? And she's like, no. So she ends up getting $20 to take him to his hotel. And
yeah, but he's driving, but she's telling him how to get there because he's lost.
Until she's like, well, don't you know how to drive this car? I mean, it's a straight H, which is front.
Like a traditional stick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I don't really, I learned how to drive a stick in 94, almost burned out my friend's transmission learning it, which Icky and I all drove the same car because we were going to a amusement park that summer. So we all had to know how to drive a car. But because I wasn't the most prolific stick driver, I was usually stuck in the back of the car. So when she says it's a typical age, and she's just like, get out, I'll drive. And so,
no, that's not what she doesn't tell him that. He pulls over and says, have you ever driven or something? And she's like, yeah, I know how to drive. She's like, yeah, I grew up around cars or whatever. And he goes, have you ever driven a car this fancy or something? And she says, no. And he says, well, you're about to. And she's like, what? And then gets in and she's like, hold on. And then she just floors it and goes.
Yeah, and she says this car handles on rails, which Edward then relays to Philip, and Philip's like, "What does that mean?" When, because obviously he had never really driven the car the way that it was supposed to be driven. because we find out that he's more interested in money and trying to acquire.
Oh, he's a sleazeball.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's George Costanza, but
I'm just saying, his character, it's kind of a mirror of the movie, because his character is kind of, if you break it down, all the things that you would think a pimp would be. Even though he's not in that line, it's a completely different storyline, but he kind of has that characteristic of everything belongs to me, everything's mine, money, 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 I don't care who I hurt, it's all about the bottom line. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and it comes back to bite him when at the end of the movie when he's like, well, since I've lost all this money, I'm going to take it out, portion of it out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to,
Edward, he tries to rape her. Yeah.
And Edward socks him a very good one. And I was actually expecting...
After he hit her.
Yeah, because that's what men like that do. And, because they feel they can...
And that's what she says.
It's a power move.
Yeah, she says, why do... She's like, did they... After it's all over and Richard Gere is putting ice on her face, she says, what do they do? And do they pull you guys aside in high school and teach you how to hit like that? Where it's like, wham, it makes your eyes feel like it's about to explode?
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, lends back to her backstory that she's been hit multiple times before, which is really...
But we are jumping way far ahead because we...
Well, I don't have an itinerary.
I know.
Sorry.
That's fine. this is your birthday movie. So Kit tells her not to take less than $100 for him. And so she says it's going to be $100 for an hour.
And he's like, $100 an hour?
And she doesn't... I honestly think she undersold herself.
Oh, yeah, that's not a thing. That's absolutely does.
Because...
You can tell by her face. Because when he asked her to stay the night, the whole night, because she's in a hurry, she's like, I'm a sure thing, you know.
Yeah.
Tries to get and stay the night. She said, what does she say, 300, I think?
Yeah, she says 300, which...
And he's like, sold, let's move on. And she's like, crap.
Yeah, because he's like, I'm sensing that money is an issue, so let's just go ahead and get that done. And
she's like, yeah, let's get started, because she's thinking the sex part, and he's like, no, let's get the negotiation part done. And that's when he says, how much for the whole night? And she goes, you couldn't afford it.
And
he
says,
try me. And she says, 300. He says, done. And you can see her face. She's like, damn.
So, yeah. And the fact that she goes, well, she starts off at 4,000, right? For the week. And then he counters with two. And then she settles on 3. And then... He comes back, or she comes back and says, I would have settled for 2, and he says, I would have paid you 4.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, she's undersold her value.
Well, she has, but she's also, it's starting to show that the way they interact with each other, the way they communicate, and the way they kind of banter back and forth, it's already, like, whether they don't realize it at this point, but there's already a relationship being built with that kind of banter and... with curtness, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So, one thing that always makes me laugh every time that I watch it is the fact that he is scared to death of heights. But he has to have the best. And so, of course, he's on the penthouse.
And he won't even go out on the balcony.
And he says, well, I looked for a penthouse on the first floor, but...
There aren't any.
Yeah. And so... Every time that I hear that, I'm like, I used to be scared of heights. I can relate to that. Never wanted to really go out anywhere that was that far above the ground until I started riding roller coasters, and then that's just downhill from there. What did you think of Hector Elizondo's character?
Oh, love him. He's probably like my favorite character of the whole movie. Because in the beginning, so didn't really go into it with the synopsis, but he is the... Manager or whatever of the hotel, and of course that hotel does not rent rooms by the hour, as they put it. And he very politely but very clearly tells her that once her uncle, quote unquote, leaves, because he doesn't want to call her what she is and what he, you know, that he's her...
John.
Well, her... oh my gosh. Like her employer, I think is what he calls it, when you're employer. Because she says it's her uncle, you know, when she's walking through the hotel and little to nothing, and he pulls her in and talks to her, and, you know, he's very politely but very clearly and sternly says, you know, after your uncle leaves, you won't be returning to this establishment, more or less. And she's like, yes, I get it, of course not, whatever. And he says, and until you leave, could you dress a little better? And that's when she gets mad. She's like, no, I tried to. That's what I tried to do. And they were mean to me or whatever.
And I have all this money. And nobody...
she's like snotting and crying over all the bills.
And she's got this whole handful
of... just a lot of cash, yeah.
That somehow got crumpled up and
into ones, which is really poetic. It's all ones in her hand.
Yeah. And so he takes compassion on her. And starts...
well, reaches out to friends and stuff that can help her. Well, not friends, but other people he knows that can get her clothes.
Connections.
And
And so, you see the relationship start to build between the two of them. Mm-hmm. Because when she actually comes back from her second day of shopping, because for whatever reason, she only bought the one dress.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, actually, she was in a hurry and it was that night.
Well, actually, I think that was because Edward actually didn't specifically say, well, you're going to need more than one dress for the week. Because...
no, he didn't. But I remember he was shocked that she'd only bought one thing. Mm-hmm. But it was because they were mean to her. And so, that, you know, that happens later. But I love his character, though, because... he almost becomes like a father figure to her, I feel like, in the movie. What's his name? Barney.
Mm-hmm. His official name is Bernard.
Bernard.
And so, and at the end of the movie, when she's actually walking out, he actually says, I hope that we will see you in this establishment again.
Yeah, it's kind of a full circle moment.
But when they actually, after she's got the cocktail dress, she has to have a lesson in how to work your way in from the...
all the utensils, all the silverware.
And it's funny because when I was growing up, every Thanksgiving and every Christmas, we would set a formal dining... well, not formal because we didn't have three forks on one side, three spoons on the other, but you had to have a certain setup for the actual dining room.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never seen, was it a shrimp fork that I asked you about?
Yeah, shrimp fork.
Because we didn't have shrimp forks in Virginia.
Hmm.
I mean, we ate shrimp, but it wasn't something that we had a specific fork for. We just,
Little small prong.
Yeah. And so, when she goes to dinner, and she's like, where's the salad? And Edward's like, well, we eat that at the end of the meal. And she's like, that was the only fork I knew.
She's like,
and the
Which is such a sweet, like, innocent moment. Like, she was truly... I love that part, though, because it's like she's truly trying to... it's not that she feels like she has to. I think she really wanted to fit in and to feel that... all of that was important, and she was doing it out of respect for him too. Like, she was trying her best to, because it was a business dinner, you know, and she was trying her best to behave, you know, quote unquote, appropriately. And it was just such a sweet little vulnerable moment, because she's like, that's the only fork I need. Like, you could see like panic in her. She's like, oh no, I've done all this for nothing, kind of thing.
And then Grandpa
Morris
is like, you know what, I've always had problems with it too, and it sets her at ease. Mm-hmm. And
then he picks up the little thing to eat.
Yeah,
and
I think that was probably pate on
toast or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the main reason that Edward was actually in town was to break down the Morris shipyards, And we start to find out that Edward's got people that he can call to start to shut things down. And they find out about a defense contract that somebody had missed in the initial lead up to the first meeting. And so he's like, well, let's go ahead and contact Adams, mm-hmm. who is the senator, congressman, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, we'll have this thing in mothballs until the end of time if we need to.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the movie, when Edward's like, well, I want to work with you because I'm tired of tearing things down. I want to actually build something. And it showed his development of character from being absolutely. Around her the entire mm-hmm. week. So,
well, it softened him. It made him see things differently, his perspectives, his everything down to what he did for a living, down to, I mean, even their conversations they had, you know, worked out things like therapy would about mm-hmm. him and his parents and her background. And, you know, the end is so cheesy to me at the very end of the movie, but it's so true that the two characters truly did save each other, mm-hmm. I feel like. Even though, I mean, it's kind of cheesy, but ultimately it wasn't just him saving a hooker, a prostitute off the street. I mean, she was saving him from himself and his trajectory of just miserable life. He had a miserable life.
Mm-hmm. And so, they had therapy sessions during that week, and she's like, you know, I have 88 inches of therapy
in
my legs.
Wrapped around. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, and it cost me $10,000 in...
$3,000.
Oh,
$3,000.
No, how much did he say that he had spent for...
$10,000. And she said...
And you have me for the low, low price.
Of $3,000. And they say it together. Yeah, that was cute.
And another part, I didn't realize that La Traviata was a story of
No, neither. That's brand new information for me.
A hooker that fell in love with a wealthy man. And that's why I said, that sounds vaguely familiar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was such, I know it's not part of whatever we're supposed to talk about. You know, I go off script. But that was such, that's probably one of my favorite parts of the movie. It's so cute. When she is just so emotional after the opera, and this little old meemaw lady comes up, and she goes, oh dear, did you enjoy this show? And she goes, oh, I liked it so much, I almost peed in my pants. But the lady's like, I'm sorry, what? Because she's so prim and proper, and Richard Gere's character leans in, and she says, yes, she loved it. She liked it more than Pirates of Penzance. That's so cute.
Yeah. as we go through the movie, we see him start to mellow out, become a real boy, to bring it into the Disney perspective. And how many times did he actually tell her to stop fidgeting?
A lot.
And
that's what she does when she's nervous or uncomfortable. She fidgets.
And then when he actually loans, or when he gets the $250,000 necklace on loan, he says, when you're not fidgeting, you're very beautiful and very tall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time that he actually did not tell her to stop fidgeting
mm-hmm.
throughout the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because she was finding her inner
confidence
and beauty
mm-hmm.
through everything that he had done with her, I guess, would be the best way to say it.
I think so.
And so he lets down his hair and actually takes a day off the next day. And he has a book of Shakespeare quotations just handy dandy in his briefcase for when they stop to eat lunch.
And I was like, squat.
Yeah. Pop a squat and eat a whatever kind of dog.
A street dog.
Yeah.
Something.
And so he's like, yes, but not near the tree because I don't like the ants. And I was like, okay. He's showing a little bit more of himself. But I don't know of anybody that carries a book of Shakespearean quotations just to have reading unless you are Edward Lewis, I guess.
Well, I mean that, but I mean that they knew that they were going to spend the day together, so maybe he. I mean, what man flies people to the opera too, and knows all about that? So.
Yeah.
You know, that's very hoity-toity, which is what he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so, at the end, when we actually get to the last, is it the last night or the morning of the last night that he proposes to set her up in her own penthouse and
or that's her the own morning of the last, that following night was supposed to be their last night. So it was really the last morning they were together, but she decides she's going to leave early. And that's when Stucky comes and tries to rape her, and then she still leaves.
Mm-hmm. And...
because they were supposed to have one more night together, but it just got too real.
Yeah. And he said, well, I'm just trying to get you off the street. And she responds with, well, that's just geography.
And, great line.
I mean, I almost shed a little tear at that moment. Because it was hitting home that, yeah... you're going to be off the streets, but you're still going to be at his beck and call
when he flies into... she would still be working for him, more or less, yeah. If he's dropping money off of the bedside, you know?
Yeah, and he's like, and I wanted you to know that I had never treated you like a hooker. And then she says, well, you just did,
as he walks out the door. Off, yeah.
And he doesn't hear that. So...
as many times as I've seen this movie... I've always wondered what she meant by that, because there's two possibilities. Either she could be referring to the fact that he wanted to set her up and do all that, or the fact that he just said, I've never treated you like a hooker. Because in the whole movie, he never once calls her that, calls her a prostitute, calls her anything like that.
With the exception of when he's talking to Philip.
With the exception of when he's talking to Philip, but not to her. And so when he says, I've never treated you like a hooker. And as he walks out and under her breath, she says, you just did. I've always thought she actually meant that part, that of him actually saying that is more so treating her like that, because it's acknowledging it than the whole of everything else.
I could see that. That it's more the fact that he, by putting that into words,
is saying
that she was.
That she was, yeah. And is and still is and all that.
So... she ends up leaving after the incident with Stucky and tells Kit that she's moving to San Francisco. Is that right?
To finish college, finish school, finish college.
And,
or go to college or something.
And she says that you are going to be the first recipient of the Edward Lewis Scholarship Fund, which was kind of funny. And then the next thing that you see is Kit down trying to fleece another... lady of the night.
No, you know who that was.
Who?
Did you not realize who that was? That was the girl in the beginning when Carlos was hitting on Vivian that was sitting there. And when Vivian walks off, she says to Carlos, do you really like her, Carlos? That was her. That was Carlos's. Because Carlos was her pimp. Yeah. And when she left him, that's why Carlos was burning her stuff and all that. That's why she didn't have anything.
And so she's like, well, I'm a really light packer. And
yeah.
So she's trying to get her in as her new roommate to take the place of Vivian. And I mean, honestly, I would like to see what happened to Kit. Whether she just kept living that life
I mean, it's fiction, but
yeah.
Based on her complacency with the lifestyle, mm-hmm. I didn't see her in any capacity trying to get out of it.
And so we have Edward come up in his white limo with music blaring out of the sunroof, and
Vivian,
he pulls down the ladder,
mm-hmm.
Words hard, and climbs up, and you see him just hugging the walls.
Yeah, he's terrified. And he, what did he say? He says, it had to be the top. And she says, it's the best.
And so... they rescue each other, and they ride off into the sunset to be reunited in Runaway Bride.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
And we probably will cover that one, because it's probably also a Touchstone film. Mm-hmm. But Did I leave any highlights out? Because we did the synopsis.
Mm-hmm. I think it was in any parts of the movie. I don't think so. I mean, we hit all of the different parts of, like, where they were and things they did, and I don't think so.
Okay. Well, one thing that I, for whatever reason, never saw was the very beginning when the guy is talking you through,
Welcome to Hollywood. Everybody got a dream. Keep dreaming. Dream your Hollywood dream or something.
Yeah, and then the next thing that you see is a person actually selling an 8-ball right there on the street. Mm-hmm. I had never noticed that in the numerous times that I had actually seen that movie.
Yep.
So, and I'm trying to look over my notes.
Well, and then it, you know, pans to the very, one of the opening scenes is the girl that got murdered and, I can't remember what her name was in the movie. She had a nickname.
Yeah.
Skinny Marie.
Yeah, and Hank Azaria is there playing the...
I have seen that movie. I know at least 50 times I've seen that movie. I never noticed that was Hank. That was him standing there as the reporter. Or no, as a cop or something. Yeah. Part of that scene.
Yeah, because he asks the couple, he's like, are y'all with the press? And she's like, no, we're out here on vacation from Orlando. And I'm like, you came from Orlando?
Yeah, and she's like filming the murder.
So,
and nowadays, you can just film your own murder in Orlando. Jeez.
Yeah. Let me see. I think we pretty much... I mean, I don't see anything that I've...
I mean, I think it's definitely worth a watch. The writing is actually pretty decent, and the way the quips and stuff, and there are some really cute parts, like the part with the strawberry and the champagne when they first meet, and in the penthouse, and the part of, you know, where he closes the necklace thing on her hand and she laughs. I mean, there's lots of really memorable, precious parts to that movie.
Okay. Well, we'll shift gears to the three questions that get asked on every show.
Okay.
The first one, what is today's impact on this movie?
What is today's impact on this movie? Or what is the impact of the movie on today?
Today's impact on the movie. It's like, well, for a lot of the movies, it's like, well... We would find the kid because he would have a cell phone and you wouldn't have to worry about where he was kidnapped or anything like that.
So is it relevant to today? Is that kind of...
Yeah.
Sort of kind of
what
that means?
Sort of kinda.
Or would it work in today's thing? So this one kind of, I feel, does kind of stand the test of time as far as impacting today in today's society, because there's not part of the movie that is technology driven. There's not a part of the movie that is futuristic or old fashioned. I mean, it's very, it's a story about two people overcoming their own insecurities and their own baggage to be okay with themselves and okay with others. So, I mean, I feel like it's not really, it's kind of timeless.
So, if it were to be remade today, of course,
Jessica Chastain would be a great hooker.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Wouldn't she? With the red hair. Like, I mean, she would be perfect for that role. Sorry, but what were we going to ask? If it was made in today's...
If it were made today, they wouldn't have to actually change anything except maybe making where the... people are on the Hollywood Walk of Fame to be...
They wouldn't even have to change that. I mean, just when I was in Hollywood in 2009. Oh my God, when was I in Hollywood? 2008? I don't know. It was a long time ago. 15 plus years ago.
Okay.
So maybe not that long ago, but in the grand scheme of things. How old is this movie? 90?
90.
So this is a 30-year-old movie?
34.
Jeez. So...
Old.
Oh, I just told how old I was, if somebody can do math. So...
We don't endorse math on this podcast.
Math is bad. So, roughly half the time ago that this movie was made, when I was in my early 20s, a friend and I, after graduating college, did a road trip across the country and went to Hollywood. And there were some ladies of the night right across from the Roosevelt Hotel where we stayed on that corner. Yeah, it was right in front of the Chinese theater, yet all that is still, they make it look so Hollywood when they shoot things there. No, it is trash city. No offense to anybody that lives there. I'm sure it's wonderful during the day. But at night it gets a little racy.
Okay. So, I mean,
they wouldn't have to change the location. They wouldn't have to change, and now they wouldn't even have to change the style. Everything she wore is kind of back in style. Mm-hmm. In the early 90s, that kind of style is coming back. I mean, it really is kind of timeless. I can't think of anything that, except for maybe, like, I don't see anybody. So how old do you think she was in this movie? Like, early 20s? Now. Like, early 20s is probably what they expected. I mean, what she was supposed to be in this movie?
Maybe.
You would say?
Yeah, mid...
Like 23, 24 or something like that?
Yeah.
It's kind of what I'm thinking she was in this movie. Maybe a tad bit older, like 25?
Maybe.
And I don't see any... that's the only thing is that how they meet may have to be changed, because I don't know any 25-year-old this day and age knows how to drive a stick.
Shoot. 25-year-olds don't know how to drive, period.
But I mean, really, like, I don't know any, because yeah. I mean, they barely even make stick shifts anymore.
She was 23 years old at the time of the
Okay, movie. So that's about right. That's what I was thinking. She was supposed to be about that age, too, in the movie. Maybe even a little bit younger. But she, I don't see a 25-year-old knowing how to drive a stick like that. Mm-hmm. So how they meet might have to be different.
Uber.
But the story itself, and like I would say 90% of the movie is still relevant as far as would it live in today's world kind of thing.
Next question is this mirrored in culture? I mean, we still have Ladies of the Night. We still have Holly. We still have sleazeballs.
Yeah, and we still have a lot of people that are super judgmental that would absolutely treat her like crap if she walked into a fancy store and tell her to leave.
Yeah.
Even though she's trying to do something good for herself. We still have grown men who think that they can just shell out money and get whatever they want. Yeah, I'd say it's mirrored pretty closely. However, I don't know how realistic the actual story is.
What do you mean?
I mean, except for Jelly Roll and his girl, there ain't a whole lot of people pulling the Ladies of the Night into a straight... Well, no, she was a stripper, though. She wasn't a hooker. Jelly Roll's wife. Y'all out there, you know who I'm talking about.
Write us. Tell us who Jelly Roll is.
Oh, my gosh, Jelly Roll!
I know.
I am disappointed in you.
No. We discussed this.
Jelly Roll's awesome, and his wife's awesome. I can't remember her name right now, but she was a stripper.
See, I'm more of a fan of cinnamon buns than Jelly Rolls.
Oh, but Lord have mercy. I can't with you. But anyway, back to the point. Like, it's not saying it couldn't happen, but I'm just not sure how realistic it would be that two people in that situation would end up, after a week, you know what I'm saying? Moving into the next phase of life together. But it's a fun story. It's romantic in a odd way.
I'm going to let you read the third question, because I can never read this and get that right. The one with the blinking cursor.
What do you mean you can't read it?
Try to say it.
How does it fit into today's society? Oh!
See? My point exactly.
Oh my gosh, why is that a tongue twister? How does it fit into today's society?
And it usually takes me
two
or three times.
I don't know, sounds like I just had a shot of whiskey saying that. How does it fit into today's society?
And you're like,
you
what
take
do you...
it away, buddy. You take that question away.
Well, I mean, as you said, this movie is timeless. We wouldn't really have to change anything.
That's why it's a classic.
Yeah.
That's what makes it a classic, are movies that you don't really have to change anything.
And that's why it did the $400 million in the box office.
Mm-hmm.
And probably packs out theaters whenever they have the anniversary releases. Or would they even do that for a movie like this?
do you think?
Yeah, anniversary? Sure. Maybe? I don't know.
You don't go to movies, so.
Let's kind of expound on that question in the sense that, what are some other movies? I'm seeing throwing a curveball at you. What are some other movies that you can think of that would still fit in today's society, even though they were decades ago? Because there's not a lot of things, quote unquote, in the movie that you would have to change, like technology and mm-hmm. all of the things, because of the storyline. I can think of one that just popped in my head. Can you think of one?
You give me yours, and while you give me that.
So, I don't know why this popped in my head. I think because I was thinking about Jessica Chastain a while ago, then other redheads that would be good, and I thought about Molly Ringwald back in the day, and like Breakfast Club is definitely timeless. Like, there's nothing in that movie that dates it, other than, I mean, because they're in a library the whole time. There's not cell phones that look odd or different mm-hmm. because there were none in the movie. You know what I'm saying? There's not, well, none at the time either, but I'm yeah. saying there was nothing other than, like, I think they had to watch a VHS or something, or maybe, I don't even know if they had to do that.
No.
I can't remember.
They had to write a paper about themselves and why they were locked into
on the Saturday.
Yeah.
But, like, that movie popped into my head because there's nothing in that movie that you would have to update the movie. You know what I mean? Stuff like that is what I was thinking.
Well, I mean, another one might be Home Alone.
Oh, no, I don't agree.
Okay, why not?
Because think of all the things that now you would have to make that much quicker of a... You call, you pick up the phone, she would have a cell phone, she would call home, Kevin, are you there? He would answer. Like, there's too much technology that would eliminate the problems in that movie. You see what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. Like, what movies can you think of that are like, you could almost completely remake without changing any, or and the story be able to be, to stick? Because, like, Home Alone is a timeless movie. Well, I don't know if it's a timeless. It's not a timeless movie, but it's definitely a classic. Okay. But there are so many things that have come along that now it wouldn't fit in our society because we could have solved the problem quicker. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And airplane rides don't take quite as long. So.
Well, and you got cell phones. Okay. Doorbell rings, you'd see the guys walking, like, people would look at their phone, like, that kind of house that they had, which still, like, what did they do for a living? Nobody knows. But, like, they would be able to pull up their doorbell ring thing and see the guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's too much technology that wouldn't fit that story anymore.
Well.
But it's interesting to think about.
I'm going to turn it to our listeners.
Okay. That's y'all, by the way.
It's late, y'all.
Didn't y'all miss me? It's been like 2 years since I've been on one of these. And I will say I've been asked multiple times, but they always do this so late, and I'm so sleepy. And I have a 3-year-old.
And I don't?
Yeah, but I'm mama.
Okay. Well, like I said, we're gonna turn this over to our listeners. So, for those of y'all that have made it to the end of this podcast, thank you for listening.
Good job.
Smart choice. If you could think of a movie that does not need to change anything, except for who would be playing the people.
Yeah, the cast.
Write us, let us know. BeKindRewindDMP@gmail.com. Also,
that's a great game. Everybody should do that. Because now I want to know what everybody comes up with.
Yeah.
And then I'll be the one to say, nope.
And we'll have you back on. And now, with this week's email.
Yeah, Grayson. I could totally read some emails and say, this is why you're wrong.
Also, if this is a movie that you have watched 50 plus times.
Like me.
And can quote it verbatim.
Like me.
Write us. Tell us what we've missed. And we will read your email on an upcoming show.
Don't want your extra kind, mate. What is it? I just want... What is it?
When
she's in the bathtub. Oh, kiss. Oh, man. That's my attempt at Prince. You're welcome. just want your extra time and your
kiss.
There, oh, baby, that was terrible.
Y'all or was it great?
Or was it great, yeah.
All right. We're going to go ahead and put a bow on this one and throw it out the penthouse window. Your homework for next week is a movie that might not hold up quite as well. It is the first authorized Disney sequel. It is The Rescuers Down Under. So that is your homework. I can't even remember what it's called. That's how late it is. It is your homework for next week. As always, thank you for listening. And until we talk again, we want to remind you to stay safe, stay hungry.
And you say who, you say when, and you say how much.
Bye. <ya. laughs> Thank you for listening. You can send us feedback at bekindrewinddmp@gmail.com. We welcome any kind of feedback, and it might get read on the air in a future podcast. Once again, the email address is bekindrewinddmp@gmail.com. If you have a moment, please rate and review our podcast on whatever streaming service you are listening to us on. This and word of mouth are the two ways to help us reach a larger audience. Thank you in advance for doing this. Thank you again for listening, and we hope you have a great day. Goodbye.
Just checking things out.
Are you looking for something in particular?
No, well, yeah. Something conservative.
Yes.
You got nice stuff.
Thank you.
How much is this?
I don't think this would fit you.
Well, I didn't ask if it would fit. I asked how much it was.
How much is this, Marie?
It's very expensive.
It's very expensive.
Look, I got money to spend in here.
I don't think we have anything for you. You're obviously in the wrong place. Please leave.
I was in here yesterday. You wouldn't wait on me?
Oh.
You work on commission, right?
Yes. Big mistake. Big.
Huge. I have to go shopping now.